You know, the people who are in control right now aren't just going to say, okay, here's Bitcoin, you know, put their hands up and have a good time and just switch to Bitcoin.
It will be completely evident to the entire world that there is Bitcoin and there is the dollar. And one of them is on the ascent and one of them is dying.
If I look back over the history of Bitcoin, it's only gone up and to the right the longer you look at it.
That to me is like the beauty of Bitcoin, is when we see these tragic events play out, is that I know that there's a glimmer of hope in these places, even if not everyone there has figured it out yet.
Like, Donald Trump doesn't know you. Donald Trump is never going to sit down and have a coffee with you, but you know, your local mayor or your counselor, whoever that is, you can actually go have a coffee with them. You actually can contact them. You actually can talk to them directly.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Joel Hodelman. Joel is just a Bitcoin pleb. He's an awesome guy. He is such a fascinating character, has some just great opinions. He was around Bitcoin in 2013, left, came back in 2021 after his eyes were opened by COVID, the Canadian truckers protests, everything, all the other madness going on in the world at that time. We just had a fun conversation talking about Bitcoin adoption, why Bitcoin, how it fixes so many of the problems that we see today. You will enjoy this one. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Joel here with me. Joel, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I think we have a mutual friend, or at least a mutual Bitcoiner in Adam Semeca. And he told me, he said, hey, you should reach out to Joel, talk to him. He'd be a fun guy to, and an interesting guy to chat with. So I'm looking forward to the conversation. I told you candidly, it's not like I had a bunch of topics that I, you know, knew you and I should dig into, but I think we could probably cover a lot of ground. The big question everyone's asking right now, obviously, is what's going on with price action? Why is it down? I mean, we have war. Isn't it supposed to be a store of value? You told me offline, you started out in 2013, you kind of left, came back just in the last 5 or 6 years. As someone who's seen Bitcoin go up and down and up and down, what's your general assessment of what we're seeing right now?
I think for myself, that's where I have the benefit, even though I would say like I'm a Bitcoiner as of 2021. I was exposed to Bitcoin in 2013, kind of dabbled with it, you know, kind of swung trade it in 2013, got out, saw it as mostly as something that would be used for criminals and wasn't something that I wanted to associate myself with, if that makes sense. But it was something that I continued to kind of keep my eye on. For times it was, you know, say once a week, it was, you know, monthly, I would say is basically my general sort of, you know, keeping tabs on it, since 2013. And I think looking back, the benefit, even though I wasn't really in it, but I was kind of keeping an eye on it, was I have basically just seen it go up. And as much as, you know, in times I was looking at it and it's like, oh, you know, I was smart of not getting in here because, you know, it's dipped back down. But then I'm also was worrying about it that, you know, now it's at $1,000. And when I was first introduced to it, it was $123. And, you know, now it's, you know, $1,300. But then thinking I'm smart again because it's now at $700. But if I look back over the history of Bitcoin, it's only gone up and to the right the longer you look at it. So when we look at it in the short term, and I think it's really easy for us to look at Bitcoin over the last 6 months of downward pressure, we can get worried and we can get emotional. But when in doubt, zoom out. Like, that's a cliche kind of saying, but it really is beneficial in looking at Bitcoin, because the farther you look out on the charts, the more you just see it's just going up. You ignore all of those little dips and divots that are in that line, and they're negligible. And when Bitcoin started to crash in 2021 and then into the early 2022, it was pretty scary for me because I had just gotten in. I basically got in right at the all-time high. I think my first real big buy-in was $67,000. You know, and a couple of days later was like, oh yeah, like everybody's cheering again that we're at 69K, and we're all thinking we're going to go to like 100,000, 125,000 was kind of what I remember being kind of the consensus of the top that we were all kind of looking for. And obviously that never came. And that was kind of the short-term hopium. And I think if anything that I've learned over the last little while is to stop looking at the short term, stop looking at Bitcoin in, you know, especially don't be looking at it daily. Don't be looking at it as like a weekly, oh, it's going to go up. But even 6 months to a year, the longer you can push that out, I think the better. I was on a podcast in August and the host asked me, you know, what are your price predictions for the end of 2026? And I had told him I thought that the price by the end of, or sorry, the end of 2025 would be like $200,000. And obviously we didn't come close to that at all. So kind of looking back on that over the last, I don't know, what is that, 8-9 months or whatever, or I guess shorter than that, but I stopped looking at the price in Bitcoin in the short term and just kind of look at it, you know. I saw something really great from someone a couple of days ago, I think it was, you know, it's a good day to buy Bitcoin today if you think that the price of Bitcoin is going to be higher in 5 years than it is today. And, you know, the more you can think about it in like a 4 year, a 5 year, a 10 year, a 20 year type investment, if that's what you want to call it, I think that's where you're not going to get emotional about, you know, these price swings and these price dips. Like, I was happy to buy Bitcoin at $126,000. I'm happy to buy it today at whatever it is, $66,000, $67,000. So I personally see it as a gift because I did value it as something that was valuable at $126,000. The value of Bitcoin is the same today as it was then. So,
yeah, I'll expand upon that thought if I could for a moment. If you, we take for granted in the West, some of what we've just been talking about here. If you're in Iran today, you that's your option, right? Like, I mean, if you want to transfer value and you, I haven't heard this, but I'm sure there are internet outages, power's down in many places. The Iranian rial is completely failed. Like, those people are getting a front and center seat to why Bitcoin. And so it's easy to say, hey, like, if you think about this, you know, over the long term, don't worry about the price. And I, by the way, I agree with you on in your sentiment. But there are millions and millions of people that we sometimes forget about around the world who need it for all of the things that have very little to do with number go up. They need it because it's censorship resistant and it's permissionless, and they can walk across a border with it, memorizing 12 or 24 words in their head, you know? And so that to me is like the beauty of Bitcoin, is when we see these tragic events play out, is that I know that there's a glimmer of hope in these places, even if not everyone there has figured it out yet. So I'll just add that. What was it that in 2021, what brought you back to Bitcoin? Was it COVID? Was it a combination of factors?
Combination of factors. I think for me, definitely COVID. I'm from Canada, but stimulus for you guys was, you know, no different. But I think we had a lot more stimulus here. Just payments going out. I think for us, it was every 2 weeks we would get $1,200 if we were laid off, not in like working or anything like that, which is just crazy. And businesses were getting money on top of that. And it was my son. So our second child was born January 7th, 2021. So it was a couple of days after his birth. Actually, I remember holding him and looking at him and thinking that all of the money that had just been spent over the last, 9-10 months, you know, he was going to be paying for the next 7 years, basically his whole life. And that's just the money that was spent over the year of 2020. That wasn't me thinking about all the money that was going to be spent in 2021, 2022, 2023, but knowing that the government was going to continue to spend at this point, stimuluses were still going out here. Businesses weren't open. I knew that the COVID shots were coming and there was going to be funding for that. And there's just going to be a whole lot of money printing and money debasement and inflation. And where I was introduced to Bitcoin in 2013 as an inflation hedge, I actually laughed at the person who told me that, because I said that the American dollar or the Canadian dollar doesn't experience inflation. That's for the Argentine peso. And today I call the Canadian dollar the snow peso. So that's kind of what I think of the Canadian dollar. And unfortunately, the US dollar is not a whole lot stronger, though I do think is obviously stronger than the Canadian dollar. But yeah, it was really looking at my son, and then now thinking, as a father, I'm here to protect my son. I'm here to teach my son. I'm here to try and make him into the man that I want him to be, the man that I think the Lord wants him to be. And part of that is I need to be those things too. I need to be the man that I want him to be. I need to be the man that God expects of me to be. So that includes a whole bunch of things. But in that kind of moment, I was sort of looking at his financial health, his financial well-being, his financial security. And it was kind of this, well, you know, I've been looking at Bitcoin for, you know, the last, you know, 7-8 years. I had just sort of started to think a little bit about, you know, stocks and all that sort of stuff. And I've seen that sort of run out of grips and, being able to accumulate and, you know, real estate was something that when me and my wife got married in 2017, we could have bought something that would have fit for us, but knew that we wanted to start a family and build and all that sort of stuff. So sort of delayed that. And then by the time it was like, we kind of felt like, hey, you know, we should buy a home. Well, now the home acquisition ability is far gone, right? It just ran away from us. So it's looking at him going, you know, how do I protect him? How do I protect his older sister? How do I protect, you know, future kids, myself, all that sort of thing. So it was kind of, about 8 or 9 months of me studying and looking at Bitcoin, because I didn't want to jump into Bitcoin. I'm not someone who, I'm a rational person. I think through my moves. I do what needs to be done, not out of emotion. And I didn't want to act on emotion. Because I kind of did that earlier in life, right? So studied Bitcoin for a while. And then basically, yeah, in I don't know if it was September or early October of 2021, decided, hey, you know, this is what I need to do, though also bought some, you know, shit coins and some other stocks and that sort of stuff that way, that were presented to me as, you know, blue chip stocks like Google, Apple, those types of things. So yeah, it was all basically with the idea of I need to create financial security for me and my family and kind of have that generational thought.
Dude, you're speaking my language. So my son was born in March of 2021. So he's okay. My only boy. And I spoke about this at Prague last year because after he was born, it wasn't until 2022 that I found Bitcoin, but I, you know, in the first year of his life, I was beginning to think a lot about like this, like when you're a father, it resonates having a boy, I think, in a different way than having a girl. And I was thinking about just like, as I got into Bitcoin, I began to learn a little bit of piece together, like how the money sort of sits at the top and everything else is downstream. You know, the forever wars. And look at us now. We're looking at this again. You know, the way that I want him to take care of himself how am I going to feed and nourish my family? Like all of these things. And I sort of realized I was sort of on the right track. And especially once I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, a lot of things became very clear, but it makes you really question each of those little decisions, because your kids are watching everything you do, right? And one of the things for me is in like working in the Bitcoin space now, I want my kids to look back and understand. Hopefully their mom can tell them the story, but that when the whole world thought Bitcoin was a scam or a Ponzi or it was going to boil the oceans or it would never work or whatever, I was out there trying to educate them, and that's where I was saving, you know, the value of my work. Because I think all this stuff, you know, it matters, and it's going to influence the next generation. So when you told me you've got three kids and one on the way, I'm excited because I'm in the same boat, and we need a lot more Bitcoin babies out there, in my opinion. For sure. How do you, So I guess it maybe as a personal question, when the price is dipping like this, do you have people in your life who know you're the Bitcoin guy, and are they mocking you? Do they even pay attention? Are all your friends and family orange pilled? Like, what's sort of the status of your world?
I think it's sort of shifted the last year. There's been a lot of people in my life that I don't want to necessarily say it's because of me. And definitely it's not because of me, but I think there's been a number of people in my life, just like in my general circle, who have found Bitcoin, which we've kind of started a Bitcoin meetup, though we haven't done it in a few months. We kind of were doing it around campfires in the summer. It's now winter out here. It's white snow, and it's kind of difficult to do that. Not saying that we can't, it's just how we were doing it. I think there's been a bit of a sentiment change in general people around me. When I talk about Bitcoin, I find that people are being a little bit more receptive and open to it than they have been in prior years, which I think is interesting and encouraging, because the price has gone down. And maybe that's because we didn't have that huge run up at the end of the cycle, if that's what we want to call it, where people weren't getting exposed to the hopium and the big, you know, FOMO of Bitcoin, and then see it all crash. Was talking with someone last week about Bitcoin, and, you know, when I brought it up, it's always kind of this, you know, I'm always assuming that when I bring up Bitcoin to a normie of someone who I don't know is in Bitcoin, that they're just going to completely reject it and think that I'm an idiot. I usually don't necessarily lead with Bitcoin. I lead with some other questions or, you know, statements that kind of get the feel of where people are at in what they might look at the economy or what they think of the world and that sort of stuff. I brought it up with him, and he was just like, oh, like this Bitcoin thing, like, why don't you tell me more about it? Like, that's really interesting. And then, you know, for whatever reason, we ended up down like the heat punk sort of rabbit hole of Bitcoin, which that's something that, like, just a sidebar conversation, that's something that I would love to get into and explore the idea of that more. But I'm just scratching the surface on that. But yeah, I think there's a little bit more receptiveness to Bitcoin for whatever reason around me. And maybe that's just, I can talk about it better, or, you know, the environment's a little more fruitful that way to be able to do things and talk about it. But it's definitely not like I'm walking around with like my whole family and everybody that I know is Bitcoiners. Still definitely obviously feel the resistance. You know, for me, it's just, you know, when people come to me and they're like, hey, you know, Bitcoin, like, how are you feeling today about it? It's like, well, I have my own conviction on it, and I've built into that. And there's not really anything that, you know, a friend's going to say to me that's going to make me think any different. It's those moments that, you know, a friend reaches out to me who, you know, over the course of the last year, I do have a number of friends who have bought above what the price is today. And there's not a single one of them that are saying to me that they're fearful. They're messaging me saying like they are buying the dip, or, hey, you know, how much lower is it going to go? Should I put it all in now, or should I, you know? And my response to that is just DCA, don't ever, you know, ape in. But at the same time, like, to me, where I am with my conviction is that if you were to ape in today and the price did go down to $40,000, $30,000, $20,000, like, so what? The price, and again, 4 or 5 years is going to be multitude higher than what it is today. So any entry point right now is a fair and good, just entry point. It's not like stocks that you have to exactly time your buy and exactly time your sell. With Bitcoin, I think you can just basically throw the dart at the wall, buy Bitcoin, and spend it when you need to spend it.
Yeah, I love that. Well, hey, let's talk about that for a minute. Spend it when you need to spend it. Are you like are you a big circular economy guy? Like, have you found vendors, or are you pushing to get folks in your life who will accept Bitcoin as payment?
It's so, no, I have not really spent a whole lot of sats. It's something that I think needs to happen. It's something that as I develop my conviction of Bitcoin, I've turned from seeing it as something that I need to have for myself. And this is kind of a very new shift for me. So I don't think that Bitcoin should just be hodled for me. I think for me to respect my time and my energy and my efforts is to store that in Bitcoin, right? But if I'm also to love my neighbor, I should be giving them something that has the value that respects their time, energy, and effort as well. So yeah, I would say over the last few months, I've been really convicted and really struggled with this idea that I earn fiat, I earn Canadian dollars. I convert my Canadian dollars to Bitcoin. I sell Bitcoin if I need to sell Bitcoin back into Canadian dollars to then pay expenses or to buy things or give stuff for services. To me, there hasn't been a whole lot of services around that I have found that use Bitcoin. We don't have Square terminals here in Canada that allow you to use Lightning. Though, you know, I'm probably not looking hard enough. There's probably ways of doing it, but it's kind of having those conversations. And again, I think I maybe unfortunately start in the wrong spot where I'm always assuming that the person's not going to be receptive to Bitcoin. But maybe they are, and maybe I just need to ask and say, hey, would you accept Bitcoin? Can we set up a Lightning invoice and send sats that way? Cause it's really not that difficult. And the more I play around with Lightning wallets and that sort of stuff and figure those out, like it's just as simple as sending an e-transfer. Like it's actually, I think it's quite easier than sending an e-transfer. So,
I'm with you, man. I have tried to make a very diligent effort the last 6 months, call it, to orange pill people. So like for anyone listening, I'm sorry, I'm going to just tell him the same thing you've heard from me a million times. I've been working to orange pill my church. So I had a couple meetings with the leadership team, with the church council, and I got them to accept my gift of Bitcoin. For that one, there were no strings attached because it's my home church and I didn't feel like that was the way to do it. But I requested that they would hold it for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And eventually I'm going to get them into self-custody. They're on a good exchange right now, but obviously, especially as a guy who we sell, you know, training for self-custody, not where I want them to be, but their conviction needs to get there to where they're going to be able to, you know, learn the skills. And then I've got a farmer's market near my house that opens, you know, sometime in May. And at the end of last summer, I had started to sort of ask some people if they'd accept Bitcoin, but didn't really, you know, it's kind of one-off short conversations. My goal is to basically orange pill the entire farmer's market this year to get anyone who I buy something from to accept Bitcoin, or at least to commit to, hey, let me learn a little bit about this before I accept it, and then go from there. Cause, I think you're right. Like most people are going to think you're a little bit crazy. It's becoming maybe a bit more of an acceptable topic. You know, if they're watching mainstream news, they're hearing Bitcoin probably a little bit more than they did 5 years ago. But it's still an uphill battle. I think they still think it's magic internet money, or there's, you know, I don't know, something like that. I don't know if that's been your experience.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there might be a little bit of a difference being here in Canada to the United States. I don't think our mainstream media at all is talking about Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin's really only being talked about the mainstream media in America because the administration is talking about it. If anything from the mainstream media is, it's been demonized here in Canada. The whole trucker convoy here was, you know, to demonize Bitcoin, and you know, you had Trudeau kind of, you know, pushing back on Bitcoin and calling it what he called it, and Pierre Poilievre, who was the, you know, the opposition leader, was supportive of it, and basically, you know, since the trucker convoy has largely been mute on Bitcoin and all of that. So I mean, we don't necessarily have to go there for this conversation, but I do think that you know, a political party that actually wants to do something good would be to adopt a healthy strategic Bitcoin policy. That doesn't necessarily mean to have a Bitcoin reserve, but I think You know, for local level, you know, at the federal level, they can print money, but you know, your state, for us, our province, your local municipality, you're really hamstrung to what the Federal Reserve, the Central Bank, Bank of Canada, Bank of England, like whatever that is, their policies. And it would be smart for, you know, especially the local cities, townships, whatever, to opt out of that and be able to kind of control their own funding that way.
That's an interesting comment, because I think I hate government more than anyone that I know. And I've thought about this before, where I think philosophically I trend toward anarcho-capitalism. Practically, I look at the world and I say, you know, I think government on some level is going to emerge. What's the best that we can do? And I think the more localized that can be, the better. I've actually thought about, should I be pitching a strategic Bitcoin reserve to my local, you know, to the town that I live in? Because that might enable them, you know, for 20 years to have sort of an ability to do things that they just wouldn't otherwise be able to do. Whereas even at like for, you know, you at the provincial level or for us at the state, still that government still feels too big to me. You know, like I live 2 hours away from our state capital, and I'm like, you don't really care what's going on in my life. And I live in a state.
They don't know you. Right. Yeah. I think like ideally it would be that your local government, your town, your city, whatever you're in, would be the level of government that has the most impact on your life, because they're the one who know you. They're the one who can actually have a conversation with you. And the farther you get out from that, being state, federal, all of that, they're so much farther removed from you. They don't actually know you. And that's not to say that they don't have maybe their spot in government or a need, but like Donald Trump doesn't know you. Donald Trump is never going to sit down and have a coffee with you. But, you know, your local mayor or your, you know, your counselor, whoever that is, you can actually go have a coffee with them. You actually can contact them. You actually can talk to them directly, and they can know your needs and they can advocate for you. So I think that if a city wants to do what a city wants to do for the actual people of the city that they represent, they kind of have to distance themselves away from the control of, you know, a bigger, larger government than them. And I think that if we were to shift to, you know, Bitcoin, you take away the power of a federal government, you take power away from the state government, and you shift the higher amount of power from the top, right now being the federal government, to the local government then being at the top. And I think that I think there's better incentives running that way. And that's not to say that every city and every town is going to do it right. But if a town's doing it wrong, you're just essentially going to move, and you're not going to, or you're going to vote them out, right?
I think that's a good point, because it's been a struggle for me, because I just have like this such a firm bias against government. I'll just say that broadly, but I think I agree with you that at a localized level, first of all, you're right. To some degree, they're your neighbors, you know, unless you just live in a massive municipality where, you know, it's like its own little state or something. But you might have the ability to influence things in a way that you just can't once you're further removed. Were you, I understand you're Canadian, so maybe you don't follow this quite as closely, but when Trump announced the strategic Bitcoin reserve, it was an executive order, so it's not been passed into law or anything. He basically just decreed it. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you were excited about as a Canadian? Like, hey, is this the way the world's headed? Or were you I was excited at first, but I wasn't as far along on my journey. And now I'm like, I don't want the federal government to have any Bitcoin, you know, they can only do that through theft. Like, where did you stand on that?
Yeah, I think maybe I'll answer your question for, I was excited. Yes, I was bullish. I was happy. I was excited that Trump had that executive order I guess that's still on the table, and more can be done with it possibly over the next 3 or so years. Where I'm on it right now is sort of what you had mentioned. I'm kind of murkied on it, but at the end of the day, I think that Bitcoin is for everybody, and that includes my enemies. And not to say that I think Donald Trump is my enemy, but the worst person in the world, Bitcoin is for them, right? And I think that Bitcoin will make them a better person, because it drives incentives. So when we look on what's going on around the world, again, a large portion of that is government-based. If governments get into Bitcoin, I think that regardless of if that's through theft, which I don't agree with, whether that's printing their dollars, which again, that's devaluing. Like, I don't actually think that that's a wise or smart move to do either. But I think that it's, I don't want to call Bitcoin like an illness, but sort of like if they get the bug of Bitcoin, like it's an illness, it's going to eventually spread throughout the body, right? But like in the positive sense, not the illness being a negative sense, right? So I think that if, you know, the United States goes that route and actually does what we kind of were hoping Trump was going to do about a year ago, if, you know, other countries start to do that, I think that just based on incentives, it's going to end up being a better world. So yes, I am still happy and excited. I'm not necessarily hopeful or thinking that Trump is going to enact on the executive order the way that we all were hoping he was going to.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's probably fair. Can we take a step back? Because you mentioned, you said you didn't know if this was something we wanted to get into, but the Canadian trucker protest, I meant to revisit that. Did you have something in particular you wanted to say? So you don't have to answer this question if this isn't interesting. One thing I've always wondered that I've never asked a Canadian is, I know what the mainstream media was saying during the Canadian trucker protests. I don't know anything about the sentiment of the average Canadian, so to speak, and to what extent they heard about Bitcoin being used and that led to them to distrust Bitcoiners, or if it led them to recognize it as a potential tool. Like, what was the climate like around all of this?
Yeah, I would say that I live in a fairly liberal city. I definitely work in a very liberal environment.
What do you do for work?
I work within a government entity, essentially. Okay. Yeah, I work for the government. I mean, probably 40% of Canada works for the government at the end of the day. So,
insulting you.
I definitely work in a liberal environment. So if I were to take the general pulse of people that are around me, they probably were neutral to not favorable of the convoy, though I live, so here in Ontario, we have the major highway. It's called the 401. It's the most busiest highway in North America, though I think that's kind of skewed. But basically, like, that ends up going through Toronto, that goes all the way from Windsor to Montreal. Oh, wow. So Windsor's just the other side of Detroit, and it goes basically right across the southern region of Ontario. So if you were to go like 2 minutes down the road from where I live right now, and you were to go on to the bridge that goes over the 401, so the overpass over the 401, you would not have found a spot if you did not get there early enough. There were hundreds of people that were packing every single bridge, and that wasn't even like, I remember I went down, like I drove down and you know, did a loop on the 401. There were people on those bridges, and it wasn't even the trucker protest convoy going through yet. And like every trucker's honking their horn. So there definitely was a support, even within, I would say, the liberal environment that I kind of live in. But yeah, I think there was obviously a great support for it, but there also was the people that weren't for it. They saw the the truckers as people who were doing something wrong. And then you had kind of what was going out in Alberta at Coutts, the border blockage there, that basically some truckers had taken their trucks and blocked the port of entry going to and from the United States to Canada in Alberta there, which kind of all got lumped into the same thing. And I think that's actually, looking back, I think that was how Trudeau had declared the Emergencies Act, which then gave him all the powers to be able to do whatever he wanted to do during that. But yeah, I think a lot of it was just mainstream media, which all media here is liberal. There is no conservative mainstream media here in Canada. So at least like in the United States, I think it's, you know, you're still sucking the same tit, but at least you have like a liberal and a conservative, being Fox and CNN or MSNBC or whatever that is. So at least you're sort of getting both skewed sides of things. Here in Canada, it's all just the same jargon garbage out of one side of the mouth, though I would imagine you would echo the same sentiment as myself. Like, it's all just garbage. But yeah, that's essentially what people are, you know, fed here, is CBC, CTV, City News, like whatever that is. It's all just mainstream liberal biased, you know, government fed, because they're really funded by the government with all of our subsidies and tax dollars that go towards them. So, I mean, of course they're not going to say anything that is, you know, goes against the Liberal Party. And I think we sort of saw a little bit of a shift in the last year or so, when it kind of looked like the Liberal government wasn't going to get in, and the Conservative government with Pierre Poilievre was at least, you know, looking like he was going to become prime minister. They sort of changed their tune a little bit, but with that not happening, and Canadian politics right now is just a mess. Yeah, it's, the trucker convoy wasn't really looked at that great, and Bitcoin was talked about in Parliament. Though again, how many people actually watch the videos and stuff that come out of Parliament? But yeah, it was definitely Trudeau was talked about negatively on the House floor. Christian Freeland, who was our finance minister at the time, definitely talked about it negatively at the time, and basically demonized it. And, you know, I think there were 10 Bitcoin wallet addresses that were told that, you know, you're not allowed to transact with them, which I'm like, who's stopping that? But then anybody who did donate to those addresses were then linked back to their bank accounts. Bank accounts were frozen. You know, I do actually personally know someone who had donated, and he's not a Bitcoiner, but had ended up donating in Bitcoin, and he had his bank account frozen for a little bit of time. And he's like, I didn't even know like much about the convoy. Like, it was just, I was just trying to help support, you know, what I thought was going on. It wasn't like I was trying to be a terrorist, but now I'm being painted as a terrorist, right? But I think talking with some people that were actually at the protest in Ottawa, there was a lot of Bitcoin going around. You know, I've seen stuff and I've heard stuff of, you know, people walking up to truckers and just handing them an envelope, which basically told them how to accept the Bitcoin, how to download stuff, and they would have sats and all of that. So I do think that the atrocities that are going on in the world, whether that's what's happening in Iran that you mentioned, whether that's the trucker convoy protest, like all these things, they, you know, tough times create strong men. And in these times, I think is when we find out how to use Bitcoin and when to use Bitcoin. And it creates the moment of like, we need it, where if I were to look at the price of Bitcoin right now, I think the price of Bitcoin is largely dictated on, you know, American policy. It's dictated on American markets. It's dictated on the pulse of America, right? But Bitcoin is global. And I think where you will actually see adoption happen at the hyper Bitcoinized level is going to be in the countries that their dollar has collapsed, their dollar has failed. It's in emergency purposes. And I think we're seeing that in Iran. You know, we're seeing that around the world, of, you know, they no longer can trust their government, not that they ever could, but there's an immediate need today where if I held my dollars in whatever dollar it is of the country, you know, I go to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and I'm holding those dollars. And then I come home at night to go buy eggs. Well, the eggs are now $12 rather than $6, like hyperinflation happening around the world, right? So there's an immediate need to survive day to day, week to week using Bitcoin, where for you and I living in Canada and the United States, I mean, if I buy Bitcoin today, it doesn't really affect next week. It really doesn't affect next month. It doesn't even affect necessarily next year. So I think adoption in the way that we use Bitcoin is going to happen in the places that are having the difficulty, and it's going to be the difficult situations in our lives in you know, the West. But I think those are going to be a little bit more isolated. It's not going to be mass US has an issue or mass Canada has an issue. It's going to be a subsect of, you know, Americans, Canadians having issues. And for me, COVID was an example of that, with the trucker convoy protests, churches being locked down, all of that, that's going to wake people up to understand that they actually need Bitcoin today and bring in the adoption and the use cases for it.
So you think to some degree we're waiting on some more dominoes to fall for the hyper Bitcoinized future? We need, it can't just be Argentina waking up and Zimbabwe waking up. It's just going to require, in may, like Iran's actually a fairly influential nation in on the global scale, because they've got oil at the very least. And it seems to me like a nation like that finding Bitcoin could actually be very impactful, because I'm of the belief, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, I'm of the belief that we're approaching a time, and I don't know if it's going to be 2 years from now or 10 years from now, but we're approaching a time where the reason Bitcoin wins is obviously for all of the properties it possesses, but also because of those properties, there are going to be people producing real value in the world, oil, energy, you know, raw materials for building anything and everything, who wake up to the reality of our monetary system, and they say, I'm done with this. You are no longer allowed to pay me in dollars or euros or yen. You have to pay me in Bitcoin. I'm providing value to you. You need to provide it to me. And that to me is like the moment that everything changes, when major suppliers and shipping companies, and when they start saying, I understand Bitcoin well enough to know that I don't want your fiat. But I think it could be some time before, you know, some of these dominoes fall. And I think it takes some pain for those sorts of players in the global economy to wake up to what we're talking about here. I don't know if you've thought through, I'd love to hear your thoughts on like how you envision the hyper Bitcoinization thesis playing out, to the extent that you fully buy it.
Yeah, I think if you asked me 2 years ago, I would say like the dollar, whether it was the Canadian dollar or the American dollar, was close to collapse. I would think today I've maybe softened my thought, at least on the American dollar, where I think we are going to see the lesser, weaker currencies experience collapse. And obviously money in those countries, so like money in Iran needs to flow somewhere. Where is it going to find its safe haven? And it's going to find its safe haven in something that, you know, people think that they can trust. And unfortunately, I think that people are going to look at the US dollar and they're going to see something that they can trust. Likewise, they are going to find Bitcoin. They are going to find gold. They're going to find silver, other commodities like real estate, oil, whatever that is. So I think like all of those assets, as well as the US dollar, move higher. So I think that the US dollar is actually going to basically suck off the life of other dying fiat currencies, which will ultimately be the demise of the US dollar eventually. So I don't particularly think that the US dollar is going to collapse, you know, in the near term future. So that, like, even in the next 10 years or a couple of years ago, I might have said, you know, I think in the next 10 years, the American dollar is gone. I think it does have some life. I think that's actually a benefit, because if the US dollar, Canadian dollar, whatever, just imploded tomorrow, there'd be a lot of my family and friends that are left in the rubble. So I think that there's a bit of a blessing, and there's some grace and some mercy that's happening right now by not just complete, total, utter collapse. But I mean, there is a path that I can see that actually does happen tomorrow because of how bad the dollar actually is. So, yeah.
I would be interested. I'll be very interested to see how this plays out, because I hear everything you're saying. And then I see someone like Parker Lewis, who I had on the podcast last year, and his thesis, I need to go back and listen to it. And I've heard him talk about it before, but I think he thinks by the year 2030, the dollar is dead, which is not far off. I think I asked him, what do you mean by the dollar is dead? Like, people do not transact in dollars anymore. And I don't think it was that. It was something to the effect of, there, it will be completely evident to the entire world that there is Bitcoin and there is the dollar, and one of them is on the ascent and one of them is dying. And you're going to have like the competition where it becomes clear to everyone what the future of global money is going to be. And that's Bitcoin. It's not that everyone throws out their, you know, cash registers and they stop accepting dollars all at once. That's not what he means when the dollar dies. Is that a scenario? To me, that kind of makes sense. It's like, eventually what you're describing, yeah, like, we're going to see, I think, a lot of these fiat currencies fail, the dollar's going to suck it up. I think that makes sense. And while that's happening, Bitcoin, I think, is going to continue to ascend. And so it sort of stands to reason in my mind that Parker's onto something. We're going to basically be left with, like, here are your options. And by the way, let me throw one more little twist into this. I think that what the dollar looks like in 2030 could be different. I think it could be than we know it today. It could be Tether. And by the way, we're going to censor transactions, and we're going to do UBI with only so much per month. Like, this is what I think stable coins are scary as hell. And so those are the two options. It's like the slavery system, it's the last man standing, or the freedom system. And it's the only option. And that's why I think Bitcoin is obviously ultimately wins. Is that a timeline that you just think, first of all, is that a thesis that you think is interesting or compelling? And second, is that timeline just insane to you?
No, the timeline I don't think is insane. I think there's legs to that timeline. I think if I look at history and I look at even what I would say is going on in the world right now, is dying power, dying countries, dying governments, dying, you know, people that are trying to hold on to their power. They're going to lose it, or they see the loss of it. And part of that, I think, is Bitcoin. Part of that, I think, is just, you know, the nature of governments, dollars, all that sort of stuff. But it's the ugliness side of the dying, decrepit, evil garbage that's going on in the world. And they're going to do everything that they can to hold on to that power. So where I think that there are legs to that thesis, I also throw into that thesis the knowledge that no evil entity, no government, nobody who has the power right now, because ultimately Bitcoin is going to transfer the power to the people that hold Bitcoin, right? Nobody's going to go down without a fight, right? So, you know, they're going to fight tooth and nail to the death. And that's why I would maybe push that timeline out a little farther, is that, you know, the people who are in control right now aren't just going to say, okay, you know, here's Bitcoin, you know, put their hands up and have a good time and just switch to Bitcoin, right? It's going to be, I think it's going to be an ugly, nasty switch. And I think you're sort of seeing that with Iran. I think you're seeing that with Israel. Like you had mentioned, the forever wars, the wars that are going on. I don't think that the people have the appetite for forever wars. I don't think that, you know, the American people, you know, would allow government to, you know, go ahead and have Afghanistan 2.0 or Iraq, whatever, happen with Iran for the next 20 years. But can they get away with it for a few months and inject money that way and then move on to Cuba and then move on to, you know, pick the country of the month, right? I think that there's going to be, you know, more struggle that way and an ugliness side of things as the powers lose their collapse. And there's going to be a resistance. And I think we've seen that, say with the trucker convoy, that you have the resistance of the Trudeau government. You have the resistance from a lot of people. And I think that's just going to come out uglier as time goes on, as Bitcoin wins. And I do think that Bitcoin has won. I think that Bitcoin will continue to win. I'm not scared that Bitcoin somehow isn't going to win. I think right now I'm a little bit more worried that Bitcoin doesn't reach the potential that it should and it can.
Mm. So how would you see that happening? Like, what would be an example of Bitcoin wins, but it doesn't really reach its full potential? It's a thought I share, I think.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Tether. I think stablecoins are a way that, you know, the number, because Tether, basically, if I understand Tether correctly, you know, they're buying bonds, they're buying Bitcoin to back it. Like there's at least a backing to it. It's not a fiat currency that, you know, basically the government is just declaring is and prints it that way. But if we're just going to wrap up Bitcoin in fiat terms and fiat lenses and, you know, not actually self-custody and not have, you know, our actual Bitcoin, and we just make Bitcoin kind of what we've known the dollar to be, I think that's where, like, I think we're in a better world, even in a fiat wrapped Bitcoin, let's say. Whether that's ETFs, whether that's, you know, you're just holding stuff on exchange, whether that's you're loaning against your Bitcoin, whether that's you're using Tether, whatever that is. But it's all censorship, controlled. It's, you can't actually do what you want with it. I think when you actually hold Bitcoin, I think that's where Bitcoin's actually going to win. And I think that's, to me, that the price of Bitcoin is probably the least interesting aspect of Bitcoin. I think for me, the most interesting aspect of Bitcoin is the permissionless, the self-sovereignty ability to actually be able to hold it and do what you want with the money. You don't have to ask the bank. You don't have to ask a third party to do something. But if we move away from that, I think that's where Bitcoin still wins, but it doesn't reach its potential. It's not until, you know, the masses are actually holding Bitcoin. And that's not to say that, you know, I think that ETFs or, you know, non-self-custodial entities out there are going to be gone in the next, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. But there's no real need per se for them. So I think Bitcoin's ultimate win is that everybody has Bitcoin in cold storage. Everybody has, you know, Lightning wallets or, you know, whatever we're using at that point. And that's what we're using. We're not trusting somebody else to interact, spend, save, and do all of that.
Yeah, I agree. There's someone who says, we'll all be rich and depressed. Like if we have this world where Bitcoin basically functions as a store of value, and probably not even to the extent that it could be a store of value with paper Bitcoin products and all sorts of, you know, fiat layers sitting on top of it. And that's, to me, why, back to our conversation about, you know, building circular economies, spending Bitcoin, that's part of the reason I think it's just so important we do that. Get Bitcoin into more people's hands, get more people learning, fewer people distracted by ETFs and treasury companies and all the other products that have really, in my view, very little to do with Bitcoin and the reason that I'm here, at least. All right, man, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we haven't covered that I was hoping to. Are there any topics that you'd like to touch on? I've got one more question for you that I end the show with for everyone, but anything that you'd like to talk about before we do that?
No, you can shoot with the last question.
All righty, man. So this is a fun one. What's an unpopular opinion that you have? You get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it.
I guess to maybe go off of our last bit of the conversation is that ETFs are a net negative to the Bitcoin space. And I think that's because it's wrapped up in, fiat jargon. And if I were to maybe throw something else into that, is that, you know, lending against your Bitcoin is a net negative, even though I can walk down on both of them, the financial gains on it. So if you have Bitcoin and you need to spend money and you were to sell your Bitcoin, you are going to pay taxes on it, where you could loan against it and there are no taxes. Like it's not a taxable event. So you've saved yourself money. You're also someone who's against the state and you're not letting them get their cut for something that you've held on. So like I can see there are philosophical reasons that I can see the agreement for. There are, you know, financial decisions that I can see the agreement on. But at the end of the day, it's just the fiat system that I'm trying to exit. And to bring the fiat back into the Bitcoin world that we're all trying to build, and leave the fiat world, I don't know why we're bringing that with us. And just to maybe go down to connect it to something else is, this morning when I was reading my Bible, I'm in Deuteronomy, and Moses in Deuteronomy is giving his last speech. Essentially, it's he's about to die. He's not going to enter the promised land, and he's kind of giving to the Israelites like the last hurrah, let's say, and he's talking about when you enter the promised land and you go in, it's not like the Israelites were just walking into milk and honey and they were just going to have a good time. There was going to be a lot of work that needed to be done. There were other people living in the nation and stuff. And part of the language that's used is you're going to have to go in and drive out the evil that is in these lands. Get rid of it. Don't allow any of it to be here. Right. And when I think of Bitcoin, not that, like I do see some connections and that sort of stuff. And I don't want to make it seem like Bitcoin is a god or anything like that. It's not to be worshipped. But when there is evil, when there is a disease, you don't want that disease to get into the thing that is good, right? So I personally, and I think you would agree, that fiat and that mindset and that way of life is a disease. It's evil and something that's not good. And that's what we're trying to opt out of. So don't be bringing that into Bitcoin. We need Bitcoin to be Bitcoin and Bitcoin only that way, and not be looking at it through and bringing in the things that we liked, right? Because I mean, if I read, the first few books of the Bible, it's, you have the Israelites that have been in Egypt, who have been slaves. They all want to leave. And then they leave, and then they're out in the desert and they're wandering, and they're saying to Moses, they're like, why did you take us out of Egypt? Like, let's go back to Egypt and be slaves, right? There is a, part of our human nature, I guess, is just to go back to
they have that slavery mindset still.
Because in many ways it was easy, right? Mm-hmm. They had somebody telling them what to do. They didn't have to think for themselves, even though they were getting whipped, even though they were getting thrown down. They weren't, doing anything that they wanted to do. In many ways, they felt like it was easier. Like, at least we had food to eat. At least there was water. Where's the water, right? And spoiler alert, like, Moses just hit a rock and water came out because God is great. But it's just something that, again, I think there's a lot of sense to ETFs. I think there is a lot of, you can make good propositions to ETFs and, loaning against your Bitcoin. I just think that it's just going back down the fiat garbage hole of what the dollar is today. And if we wrap Bitcoin in that. That's where I think, you know, we don't hit Bitcoin's potential. And I think one of the things with fiat is that you're trying to bring the future to today, right? And under a Bitcoin standard, like if you don't have the means to buy a car, you're not going to buy the car. And I think that that's okay. I think things come when you can, and you know, it's not to covet the thing that you don't have. So it's just a difference in shift. And that doesn't mean that life is necessarily easier in that way, but you're going to have what you need. You're going to have what you can. And I think that that's just a better way of life. So just get rid of ETFs and, you know, loaning against Bitcoin and all that sort of stuff. I think they're going to end up being a net negative. And if we keep going down those avenues is where Bitcoin's not going to hit its potential.
Well, that's an unpopular opinion, but you have no disagreement here, my friend. I couldn't agree more. So Joel, thanks so much for the time, man. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, follow you, anything else you want to share before we hop off?
Yeah, you reach out. I'm on X, Joel Holdeman. I think it'll be up here on the screen. Yeah, shoot me a DM, reach out, interact with me. I love to talk Bitcoin. If you agree with something that I said, let's talk about that. If you don't agree with something that I said, I'm all ears. I'm open to criticism. I know that I'm a retard. I'm an idiot in many ways. So I'm not right. So and I've been proven that every day of my life. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I think you got some good takes. So really appreciate you being here. Let's stay in touch. Are you going to be in Vegas?
I had thought of it. We're going to have our baby in June. So before we knew that we were pregnant, we kind of were thinking about maybe doing Vegas this year, but, no, I don't think those are in the cards, just being so close to when babies do. So
I hear you, man. All righty, brother. Well, take care. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. And that's a wrap again. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joel. Go give him a follow online. Just an awesome guy. And of course, if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can also help you with a Plan B residency in tropical Panama. We've got online privacy options and privacy phone setups we can walk you through. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Do me a huge favor. If you're enjoying the show, give us a like, subscribe, comment, share it with a friend. We would love for you to support us and help feed the algorithm to get the message of Bitcoin out to the masses. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.